I remember ringing up my mum and saying, I need you to make me a priority. I need you to tell me that I'm the most important thing in your life. And she said, I can't say that to you because I'm dealing with my own grief. And I remember putting the phone down and thinking, I always wanted to be a presenter. It was something that I had wanted to do since I was maybe 5 or 6 years old, but it hasn't been an easy journey to get me to where I am today. At 30, I lost my job, and not only did I lose my job at ITV, I lost my dad in the space of 3 weeks. It's safe to say that I hit total rock bottom. It had been 10 years of grafting, and I had gone at full throttle constantly, and this was just my moment to say, I'm done.
Did you feel like it was gone and that was that?
That real pain and rawness around the grief just wouldn't lift. I really had to go to the edge of that cliff and stare down. And it was so dark. By doing that, I left an industry that I had worked my fucking ass off for 12 years. And it's taken me a long time to rebuild it.
Sometimes I think you have to fall apart so that a better version of you can come together.
I say this to a lot of women. If you have listened to your body and you recognise the symptoms, don't run away from them, don't get fobbed off at the door. Hundreds and thousands of women just get turned away and don't get heard. It's frightening.
What can we do to change the conversation?
Let's be brave about it. Let's not be hiding away and feeling ashamed or embarrassed. Let's not be pushed out of our jobs.
Sisterhood, I would say, is a
sisterhood.
Thread.
We've been through so much as women. We should be there to lift each other up, support one another. You can have a good menopause. You can have a great menopause.
Welcome to Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wasko. In this series, I'll be chatting to a whole host of incredible guests to discuss the unique challenges, triumphs, and transformative experiences that often define us as women in midlife. Through shared personal stories and advice, we're going to tackle some of the most important and relevant women's issues to date. I see this as more than just a podcast. It's a movement to change the narrative around midlife so that women see their second act as a time of opportunity, renewal, and excitement. So join me, Debbie Wasko, on this journey of grit and grace, sponsored by The Better Menopause, science-driven solutions for women in menopause.
Today's guest is a brilliant broadcaster, presenter, and the co-founder of the hit parenting platform, Made by Mamas. She's known for her honest, relatable take on motherhood, midlife, and everything in between. And she's passionate about helping women feel seen and feel supported. We're so delighted to have her as our guest today. Welcome to Grit and Grace, Zoe Hardman.
Hello. Hello.
Thank you for joining my living room.
Oh my God,
on a
it's
sunny
so
day.
Beautiful. You don't know it yet, but I'm moving in.
Okay. Which is amazing. Upstairs.
Yeah, perfect.
Zoe, you have had such a varied career and you're a true polymath in terms of the different things that you've done and how you do them. Walk us through it.
Oh my gosh. I always wanted to be a presenter. It was something that I had wanted to do since I was maybe 5 or 6 years old. I was always kind of taking the opportunity to grab like the 1980s camcorder and deliver something ridiculous to camera. But I was really sporty at school. I was really, you know, into my drama, into theatre. So I was kind of running the both, not an academic, or at least not an academic in kind of the true form in terms of science and maths. But I was always very creative, and it's something, you know, most people turn around to me and say, how did you know what you wanted to do? I feel like it was something I was born with. So the path was always kind of destined to be that. And I dropped all my sport for some reason at about 15. And then
it's very typical for girls.
It was weird, right? Me and my husband were talking about this in our kitchen the other night, saying what happened. I remained sporty, but competing on that level to then suddenly turn around and go, that's me done with that. I don't really know what happened at that point in my adolescence.
Boys happened.
Boys happened, partying happened. Situation between my parents where they nearly split up happened. I really derailed at that point in my life, which I think, as you've said, probably happens to a lot of people in their teenage years.
Do you think about it with your daughter? My daughter's 14, so I think, and she's extremely sporty, so I think about how to keep her going, because that I think it's quite standard fare.
Yeah.
How do you think about that as a parent?
So my goal with the kids is that they have something that they're really passionate about. You know, I don't need them to win an Olympic medal. you know, or to be kind of, you know, winning an Oscar. But I do want them to have something that they stick at, work towards, have the self-belief in, because I think that's a really important component for later life. So even if they decide, you know, that they'll carry on playing tennis, but it's only with their mates, or they'll go on their ski trips every year, but they're not going to be competing like I was, that's fine. At the same time, I know what happened to me at that point in my childhood, and it was really damaging for me to lose everything at that stage. So yeah, I think it's about encouraging them to be outdoors and for us to keep going off and doing our ridiculous bike rides every weekend and going to hit a ball around and playing cricket and stuff, because I want them to be, I want them to have that desire to learn more, and also that just that craving to be out in nature. All of that really matters to me. I don't want them to just be sitting around on their iPads doing fuck all. Can I swear on this podcast?
I think you have.
I have. We'll beep it out.
So talk me through how a week and a day works for you now, because you've got, as I can relate to, a lot of different jobs. So yeah. How does it make sense? How do you make sense of it? And how do you define yourself? Are you a presenter? Are you an entrepreneur? Are you a podcast host? Are you a businesswoman? Like, who's Zoe?
What a massive question. I think, like all women, we wear so many different hats. Like, if you look at your day and I ask you how you define yourself, I think it's really difficult to do that. Saying that, I'm first and foremost a mum, which, by the way, I absolutely love doing. I see that as really the most important role, because I'm just desperate not to mess them up. So I take that really, really seriously. My career has given me so many joys. I'm definitely a broadcaster, radio host. I love playing music out to people. And also, the business side of things has come to me in the last 10 years. So you've got to think, before that, I was predominantly a TV presenter and hadn't really dabbled in business that much. And actually, probably like a lot of women, felt a bit of imposter syndrome when I sort of dipped my toe into it. I didn't really realise that you didn't have to have a degree in business to be able to do it. And I would also constantly be making kind of silly quibs against myself, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm head of social, and oh, I'm just here to do the introductions. Whereas actually, I'm really good at doing business and I can definitely open those doors. But more than that, like, I understand how people tick, and I really love connecting A to B to get C. Like, that really gets me off. So yeah, I'm a business owner and I'm a podcaster, and actually, weirdly, like a bit of a parenting expert now, even though I'm not an expert. But because of all the conversations that we've had on the podcast, I feel like it's like a therapy session every single day when we're talking on Made by Mamas.
So talk to me about the podcast and more.
Yeah.
So how do you think about Made by Mamas, and what are the next steps for that?
So obviously, as you know, Made by Mamas was born out of myself and Georgia meeting when we were both pregnant in a coffee shop in Cheltenham. And I say this to a lot of people, that one smile to somebody sitting opposite you, you know, who also looks like they're having a rubbish day, could lead to a whole new career. Never be frightened to outreach to people. What started off as just a podcast has ended up being a parenting platform where people come to get advice, support, love, where people don't feel judged, parents, because let's be honest, how shitty is it when you're a parent and you're constantly feeling like people are telling you that you're doing it wrong? We launched Made by Mamas Careers last year, which is our recruitment business, and we specialise in getting mums back into the workplace in a flexible way so that they can still do the doctor's appointments and they can do the sports days. And that's really important, because I think sometimes as the primary carer, we feel, oh, actually, I can't have a career because I'm going to let my kids down, or I'll let my employers down, so I'll just do nothing, you know? We've actually just launched Made by Mamas Holidays, so now we're essentially...
Where are we going?
Well, first of all, we're going to your garden because it's so beautiful. we're kind of trying to, you know, essentially find brilliant places for people to go on holiday with their kids. And Georgia has bought her PR agency in-house now. So we've got Made by Mamas PR. So
you're building an empire.
A bit of a media agency where you can kind of come and get everything.
So how has that felt? Have you felt seamlessly, perfectly confident? Have you had
no
twinges of imposter syndrome? What do you do? How do you feel? And what have you done when those feelings have come up?
Oh my God, I get them all the time. Who doesn't? I mean, this is a bigger conversation, because I think it's important to start off with the fact that at 30, I lost my job at ITV. And not only did I lose my job at ITV, I lost my dad in the space of 3 weeks. So going from the biggest high of my life, presenting a show on a channel that I loved, feeling like I had my whole life together, my parents in love together, you know, everything was great, to having the biggest tragedy of my life, losing my father, but also in the same breath, losing my identity. And it's safe to say that I hit total rock bottom, as in I was so low. I couldn't really get up and out of bed every day. It was a really bad time for me. Mental health-wise was just shocking. And I was very lost. I felt very bewildered. I felt very alone. I felt very frightened. So I really had to rebuild myself. And I have been trying to rebuild myself over the last 10 years, really to get myself to the position that I sit in today, which is feeling very confident. And, you know, I am the ideas person. I am the person that has, you know, these big visions of where we can take the business and what I can do personally and how I want to parent. And I'm always thinking about creation. You know, I lots of people talk shit. I do shit. And I'll always be that person. But it hasn't been an easy journey to get me to where I am today.
On this podcast, we talk a lot to amazing women about practical things. So how did you actually do that? Mm. So if you rewind a decade, and that was a time of loss and grief and trauma, what did you do to get through that? What practical steps did you take?
Yeah, it's a really big question for me. Well, first of all, I got myself into therapy. After the initial shock of losing my dad had settled, my mum went back to Africa and I was on my own, living in London with no job, no future prospects of doing anything because I couldn't face performing anymore. Mm. I remember having a conversation with my agent and saying, I can't be a presenter any longer. And she was like...
Because you didn't have a joy for life. You couldn't do, I mean, I know how that feels because our jobs are so, but how did you feel like it was gone and that was that?
He just died. And I just could not get over the shock of the death. You know, I think one minute he was just this brilliant tripod in our world that was just keeping us all together. And the next minute he was just gone. I mean, I remember sitting with him after he died and just like, asking him the question why he'd gone, you know, there was that sort of, and that real pain and rawness around the grief just wouldn't lift, Debbie. That was the first time in my life that I hadn't been able to pick myself up and get myself back on with it. And I wasn't prepared. Like, I'd experienced grief in the past, but it wasn't on this level. And so it was like a big red stop button had come for me. And I don't know if you've ever had that moment in your life, but I'm actually really glad that I respected it and just went, right, I'm taking a step back. I didn't pursue any other avenues at ITV. I didn't want to see anybody, be with anybody. I couldn't find the joy in life any longer. I just needed to step back. And remember, it had been 10 years of grafting and I had gone at full throttle constantly. And this was just my moment to say, I'm done.
And then what happened?
So I remember ringing up my mum and saying, I do feel quite emotional, saying, I need you to make, I remember saying, and bearing in mind I was 30, so I was a grown up. I remember ringing her and saying, I need you to make me a priority. I need you to tell me that I'm the most important thing in your life. And she said, I can't say that to you because I'm dealing with my own grief. You have to deal with this, essentially. And I remember putting the phone down and thinking, right, what am I going to do? And then a very good friend of mine said, you should go and speak to a therapist whose name is Phil. He deals specifically with grief and trauma. And I thought, oh God, here we go again. Because I'd done a bit of therapy throughout my eating disorder, but this felt really big, that I'd have to unpick all of the stuff that was a lot of stuff. Anyway, I did it. I ended up being in therapy for 2 years and my life was still stopped at that point. You know, I'd had a relationship which failed. I was clinging on to him for healing, you know, all of this. It just was so muddy. And I remember the day that was the last day with Phil. So he was telling me, you know, there's so much about grief. It brings up so much stuff from your past, right? So like all the stuff about my parents that I'd kind of put on a pedestal that I now know wasn't exactly what I thought, stuff in my childhood, you know, inner child work that I had to do. Just, I really had to go to the edge of that cliff and stare down. And I did, and it was so dark, but wow.
So brave.
Oh gosh, I feel that. I feel that now because now I feel like I can handle anything that life throws at me because I really did go there. And then I met my husband. So therapy, yes, definitely. Really reflecting, stop being such a people pleaser, stop doing everything for everybody else. I needed to focus on myself, and that was okay. By doing that, I left an industry that I had worked my fucking ass off for 12 years, and it's taken me a long time to rebuild it.
And there's grief in that too, right?
Oh gosh, yeah.
When life doesn't work out quite the way we expect, there's also an enormous power in it, and in owning your own next chapter, writing your own story.
But grieving is such a beautiful word there, actually, because it wasn't just losing Dad, it was losing my... I felt that I had lost my career. I remember a magazine, one of the women's publications, doing an interview on me, and it was... I remember seeing it and thinking, and they were like, Zoe Hardman, household name, da-da-da-da, and it was like 6 months before that. You know, she, it was like a one-to-watch thing. And, you know, I wore it as a bit of a badge of honour at the time because I thought, I'm doing this here. And it just went. And you also feel completely discarded by, you know, the people that you thought were protecting you, the people that you thought had your back, you know, the companies that you've worked for, all of that stuff. I just felt they'd gone in my mind. So, yeah, it was a pain that I had to deal with, and it took a long time. But I'm so grateful that I went through it, because I just... I'm a different person and a better person today who's able to cope with things that I wouldn't have been able to cope with then.
Sometimes I think you have to fall apart so that a better version of you can come together. And also, it's generally not an accident, right? It's work.
Yeah.
Like, that is the work. It's hard.
It's really hard. I don't know if you've ever had to go through that therapy.
For sure. Yeah, I mean, I still do it once a week. On certain days of the month, I dread it.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you feel exposed?
Yeah, and sometimes I don't want to. And I think you have to do it when things are good and when things are bad, for me, because I think it's a muscle. And you and I like working our muscles, right? But it, you've got to have your checkup from the neck up, I think.
I agree.
And make that time, particularly when life is so busy and when we're doing everything that we're doing with work and children and everything. Yeah. I think it's important, but it's not always fun.
Do you get angry?
Yeah, furious. I mean, that's also why I box. You know, I think as women, we're not taught how to express our anger. In fact, it's seen as something that we shouldn't display because it's not attractive. Or it's seen as being emotional, or it's seen as being difficult. And actually, I think anger is really powerful. And, you know, the theme of the podcast is grit and grace. And I was going to ask you to talk about, as you have, a time when you've really had to dig deep for grit. But as ever with this podcast, it's how, I'm very, very focused on the how, because I think we can talk a lot in very general terms, particularly about things that are difficult for amazing women. Sometimes we don't want to seem vulnerable. But in those digging deep times, you talked about therapy, but what else do you do?
What else do I do? I'm very good at using exercise as a form of escape and therapy. I actually just did the front cover of Women's Fitness and talked about this exact thing.
You looked amazing.
Thank you.
I want to tell you, you looked amazing, but we don't need to just talk about how amazing you look. I want to know what it does for you.
Exercise for me is the biggest light switch, and it just brightens up my world. And we talk about it a lot on our podcast, you know, we've especially postnatally, when you've got mums that are saying they feel really, really low. And I, you know, obviously I'm not talking about postnatal depression here, but even just getting outside, being out in nature, nature and the universe are two of the most important factors in
and
my
what
life.
Do you do? Do you run? Do you throw weights? What's in the
all
mix?
Of it?
Everything.
All of it. Bike rides, running, you know, I do yoga, I do HIIT training, I do personal training sessions in a group. So I guess not personal training, but six of us.
Group training.
Yeah, exactly. All training. And, you know, I play tennis. I just do everything
and
that
do
I can.
Do you pick up the weights?
Oh, yeah.
You see, I never picked up the weights, but now I pick up the weights. And I think that's, we know the science in midlife, but I think strong women, that's what I try to channel in a way that exercise probably used to be a bit more punishment. So how do we feel doing the weights?
Right, women are terrified of picking up weights because they think they're going to end up looking like a female bodybuilder, which, by the way, would be wonderful if that's how you wanted to look. But you would have to be eating 25 chicken fillets every single day and broccoli and brown rice for that to happen. That's not going to happen. This is all about setting us up for later on in life. And I want to be able to pull myself up out of my chair at aged 80 so I can reach for another glass of rosé. I don't want someone else to pass it to me.
No, fair enough.
You want
to pour your own.
You want to pour my own. So picking up weights is key. And also, do you know what? I think it's amazing what happens to the body when we start doing that. You know, lots of people say that they can't get toned and that they're doing these HIIT classes, but actually they've got no muscle mass. You get through 2 or 3 weight sessions a week, because really that is the most important thing here. For heart health, bone health, it will completely transform you.
Terry Harbin says do weights.
Do it!
Now, one of the things I know about you, and we have actually, I think, talked about this before, indeed on Sky News together,
yeah,
is that you hit menopause early in life.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about that and what happened.
Mm-hmm. So I'm coming out of the fog of losing my dad. I'm starting to rebuild my career on heart, which was amazing. And thank you, Mark Wright, for giving me that phone call that day saying, do you want to come and...
Is that how it happened?
Right. So I'm at Ministry of Sound doing the Head Candy show now because I'm just starting to come back out. And I've been there for a year. And I've also learnt, by the way, in that period where I was on rock bottom, I've learnt to DJ, which I should have done when I was 15 because I bloody love it. But I was like, right, I'm going to get some decks, I'm going to learn. So I'm DJing all over the place, forehead candy, it's amazing. But I've worked with Mark on Take Me Out, and the phone rings, all right, girl. And I was like, hello, my darling, what's going on? He was like, well, I've got this massive job in America. I'm going to go and do extra. Do you want to cover me Club Classic show? And I was like, yeah. And he goes, but I think we're going to have a problem with the head candy ministry thing. So come in, do a demo. Anyway, I went in, did the demo, and they were like, you're brilliant, let's make this happen, but you're going to have to let that go, which was sad, but I did it, moved across the heart, and so what was the question?
Early menopause.
Oh, we're coming into it. So then I meet Dozer, we have this amazing love affair, this is all going on, it's brilliant. We decide pretty quickly that we're going to have kids.
And how old are you at this stage?
33, but this is all off the back of getting a phone call from my sister who'd been experiencing these horrific, horrific symptoms for about a year. So she's married, comes off her contraceptive pill and realises pretty quickly that the contraceptive pill had been masking her menopause for a long time. And unfortunately that left her completely infertile. It was just a complete tragedy. Another tragedy for the family actually, because that's all she wanted to do was have children. So I get this phone call. She's kind of had the last consultation with a specialist saying it's not a brain tumour, because that's what they thought initially, but actually it's menopause and it's left you without any eggs. So she phoned me up to say, it looks like it's hereditary. If you want to have a family, you're going to have to get on with it.
How did that feel?
Well, I was in Ibiza at the time, so I was...
Child ready. Ready to procreate.
It felt horrific, but I was more grieving her loss, because there was something in me that thought, I'll be okay. I was still having regular periods at this point, so I thought, I've still got a chance here. But I had the conversation with Dawes and said, look, I know we've only been together for 7 months, but we're probably going to have to go through the egg. I'd like to freeze my eggs. I think that's how I phrased it. Tried to do it. I went to the London clinic on Harley Street and went through the whole process of trying to freeze eggs, all the injections, all the scans. Every time I went for a scan, another egg had died. And I thought, fuck, we could be in trouble here. And eventually there was one left. And the doctor said, we're not going to go in for one. It's too much of an invasive process. We're going to have to pause this. I don't think this is going to work for you. And I remember standing on the steps. I'm sure everyone's had this moment where it's like tumble dryer, like noise, and you're thinking, shit, I don't know how to fix this because I'm such a fixer. And Dozer just said, well, let's just go off and have loads of sex and see what happens. Of course he did. 3 months later.
Hardship.
3 months later, and a lot of like legs over the head type situations. I'd fallen pregnant by the January. So I was very, very, very lucky. Consecutively had the 2 kids. And then after Kit, I just started to feel awful, pretty much straight away, as in after the birth, I wasn't clicking out of the real sort of hormonal fog. And at 37, after like probably a year of symptoms, I decided to go and have some blood tests taken. And yeah, it was all happening at that point. I knew it was anyway. I was ready for it, I
and
think.
The conversation, so this is how many years ago?
So I'm 42 now, so five years ago.
So the conversation around menopause was very different then, I would say, in terms of everything that's happened in the last few years post Davina McCall and now Oprah in the US and indeed Better Menopause, everything that we're doing. How was it 5 years ago to say, this is what has happened to me?
Oh God, terrifying. Awful on a bigger scale, but in my marriage, God, I was like, I'm a dried up old prune. He's not going to fancy me anymore. We were just going into lockdown. Caroline had just died. It was awful. I mean, I remember vividly being in the bedroom one day and I was like raging because the rages were awful. The kids came in and they heard me saying, I'm going to smash my head against this glass to stop the noise. That's how angry I was. I'll never forget that. They were so young, they don't remember it, but I do. But I was really frightened. And even though I knew that there was a chance that it would come, nobody's ever really prepared for that. I mean, I've got friends now, I'm sure you have, who list off all the symptoms and they go, I wonder what it is. And I go, perimenopausal.
Yes.
So you're still in denial at the crunch point.
Yes. And also, you had so much happen.
Yeah.
You had so much change over a decade. Mm. You had grief and trauma and pregnancy and fertility treatment and everything.
Yep.
So yes, but it's quite hard to give it a name, isn't it?
Yes.
Because it could be one of a number of things. And I think, and rewind 5 years, if I look at my own health issues and realising that I was in perimenopause, I'd never really heard the word.
No.
Like it just wasn't in common parlance as it is now.
Mm.
And you had every reason to feel actually pretty pissed off.
I was.
Right? So how did you put all of that together and how did you get help and what did you do?
I'm so grateful to my initial doctor who really, really heard me. And I say this to a lot of women, if you have listened to your body and you recognise the symptoms, don't run away from them, don't get fobbed off at the door, don't get, oh, you're just a tired, burnt out mother, and then you're sent off with some antidepressants, you keep going back, and hopefully on the first visit, they say to you,
and who
you
was
need
he?
Some
was
help.
He your GP?
She sorry, was a GP. She... Yeah, she was just my local GP where we live, but she really heard me because the third blood test came back pretty normal, and it was the day of Caroline's funeral. I remember it. And I remember getting the results back to the third one, and she said, even though the third one's come back that your estrogen levels are fine, you're not fine. You need some HRT here, so I'm going to prescribe it. Come and grab it. And I grabbed the prescription, and that was a turning point for me. Even though the oral HRT didn't work out, she was like, I know what's going on here. And actually probably quite revolutionary. Like
I think so, early, 5 years ago.
5 years ago, exactly. And now I see Naomi Potter and her clinic.
Fabulous.
She's amazing. Thanks to Lisa Snowden, who was like, get in there and see her.
Yes.
And we've really figured out a great space, and I feel really balanced with my hormones. But at the beginning, I imagine hundreds and thousands of women just get turned away and don't get heard. It's frightening.
What can we do to change the conversation?
Someone told me something so funny that actually when you go in there, say to them, it's really impacting my libido and my husband's not getting sex anymore. And if it's a male doctor, he goes, here you go, here's a prescription. We can't have the man not having sex
amazing.
Now, can we? No, but it was a joke. But I think what can we do? We can keep talking about it. Awareness is key, isn't it, Debbie? You know, keep talking about it. Keep trying to drive change. And also not frightening people, because that's how I felt. And now I say to women, you can have a good menopause. You can have a great menopause. I feel absolutely fucking great now. I really do. And my libido's come back. That often dips and, you know, ebbs and flows as it does. But I generally feel that if we just keep coming together and keep having these amazing conversations, we can drive change in that area, in that space.
And let's talk about men for a moment. We don't often talk about them on this podcast, but
let's
give them a minute.
I have a good one.
Okay, so talk about that. So how has the conversation been with your husband, and what role do you think men can play in understanding and supporting us at this stage of our lives?
I think firstly, you know, if you're in a heterosexual couple at home, it has to start there first. Don't be frightened to talk to your partner or husband about it. And also letting them know how how scary it can be and how you're truly feeling, I think is really important. Having the conversation, that icky conversation around sex, if your sex drive has dropped off the cliff, tell them, because they need to know. Otherwise, they might just think that you're not into them anymore, because it's not that. You know, I'm so into my husband, but sometimes I just feel dead. I feel nothing. That can come and go. And then your employer, I think I remember sitting down at Heart and telling my lovely boss, Rich, in a very small room where I was having a hot flush and feeling like shit, that I was going through the menopause, and they were incredible to
me.
Were
they?
Yeah.
What form did that
Yeah,
take?
Just...
And also, I mean, how old were you at this time? You're in your 30s.
37, 38.
So how did you... Yeah. Do it.
Yeah, I just asked to have a meeting with him and sat down with him and just explained that this was going on. It's quite emotional. I'd known him for a while, so he held it because it was impacting my job. I couldn't find the words on air, which was quite scary. But they were great. You know, there was a couple of occasions where I didn't make it into work because my night flushes were bad. And yeah, they were just there to hold my hand. But men have to support us in the workplace. They have to drive the conversation there, and they have to really, really understand as much as they can that this is a huge, monumental moment for us as women. Not a bad one, not a good thing, but just a big change.
And what did Rick do? Because he sounds like somebody who handled it well.
Rich,
so Rich, what lessons can we learn? What can we tell men? Be more like Rich.
Be more Rich.
Okay, go on.
Be more Rich. Be compassionate. Be caring. Speak to the right people. He had the conversations with my producers, even though I did as well. And I even told the guys on security. You know, people in the building knew what was going on with me because I needed that support. You know, I wasn't embarrassed by it. I wasn't ashamed by it. You know, I'd walk in and the security guys would be like, "You're right." And I'd be like, "Had a bit of a rough night last night, bit of brain, you know, feeling a bit low, bit of brain." And they'd be like, "Okay." But hopefully they were then going to go and talk to their girlfriends or partners or best friends about it.
What does it take to do that? You just thought...
Bravery. Yeah. I felt brave. Let's be brave about it. Let's not be hiding away and feeling ashamed or embarrassed. Let's not be pushed out of our jobs. Let's be there talking about it, because actually what it's done for me is made me have a much more deep understanding of women as well. You know, we're in it together. We're all in it together, as we would be for men if they had a problem with their penises.
Yes.
I mean, that's quite random, but do you know what I mean?
I do get it. So sisterhood, I would say, is a sisterhood thread through your life.
Yes.
In that, when I see you and think about you, I think about you with your gang. Maybe Mamas is that, right? You're doing that in your business life. You mentioned your lovely friend Caroline, which obviously, you know, has been a big part of your story and the story of you and her friends. Mm-hmm. I also think you've just had to deal with so much. Reflect on that a bit, and women and sisterhood and relationships and how that's got you through and continues to get you through.
This will bring up a big moment, because I never felt that I had that connection with girls at school for some reason. I'd never found my tribe. I had one lovely friend, Sally, who I don't see anymore actually. But now,
Hi Sally,
I miss you. But now I feel that those female relationships are more important than anything else in my life. They are the purity, the support, the total joy in my life is those women. And we should all be telling the women in our life how much we love them. I'm so grateful to my girls and to my daughters for being there for each other. You know, do you remember being at school when it all gets really nasty and bitchy?
Oh yeah, well I see it with my 14-year-old daughter. You're in and you're out, the sun shines, it doesn't.
Why? You're... Why does that happen in female relationships specifically? What can we do as mothers and as friends to make that change? You know, if someone's, you know, done something really bad to you and she's a female, then, you know, we cut her out. But there's that feeling, and we're sort of almost, it's accepted as teenager girls to start being bitchy and nasty to each other. And I do not want that in my life. I will not have it. I don't tolerate it. We should be there. We've been through so much as women. We should be there to lift each other up, support one another, and make sure that we always feel that we've got each other's backs, and instead of tearing us down. Just, I'm so passionate about it.
Preach.
I am. Do you not feel the same?
Oh God, I mean, look, we've built businesses around this, you know, Albright, We had Sisterhood Works in Neon and the entrance halls. You know, that was a big part of the way that we thought about how to combine profit with purpose. And I think that's probably the same ethos as Made by Mamas, right? It's like, can you do the good thing that makes a difference for women? And in my life, I've got a lot of sisters, and Anna, my business partner, is one of four sisters. Yeah. So we firmly believe and live actual sisterhood.
I'm with you.
But how would the world change if we could take that and make that the way that we ensured that we and other women got rich? You know, that's how I think about my business life. And I think if you stay true to that, and you're figuring out, frankly, how can I monetize lifting women up and providing better networks for women, then I think that's the win-win. For me anyway, that's the kind of holy
grail. Did you have a mother who had the same ethos?
Well, I'm from a family of profoundly difficult women. I'm the sort of latest in a long line. So I'm used to a vast sprawling matriarchy. It's the women in my family who ran the businesses and made the decisions, sometimes in difficult circumstances because a husband had died or there'd been a divorce. And I think that I have seen how they've really driven outcomes and relationships and whole families together. And having so many sisters so close in age,
right,
and being at a girls' school. And I think that has always been important for me. And additionally, I've always been a woman in a man's world. You know, I founded my first business at 25. I've raised money from venture capital and private equity. And you're so used to spending time with men that spending time with women has always been my happy place. Partly, I think, because there were just so few of us. So those relationships, and I think they can be set up to be combative. Sometimes it's easier for men if we don't get on. I think really thinking about who has your back? And in my life, it's always been the women. The WhatsApp group, definitely. And I think finding a way, given my business chops, to ensure that me, them and others have economic independence has been a massive driver for me.
I love that, Debbie.
And in midlife, you know, like, and I think the sort of last question for you is, what next for Zoe? Because I feel the best is yet to come. And from the way that you've described a dozen pretty tumultuous years, right? But I think women are made in the fire.
Oh, yeah.
So talk to me about that and what next and how you feel about what next for you.
I'm really excited about what's next, actually. I'm constantly thinking about it and wanting all of my hard work to really flourish and take off. So Made by Mamas Careers, which is all about getting mums back into work in a flexible space, which I spoke about. I really want that. I really want big businesses to get on board with that and use us to try and find all these incredible candidates for roles that they need to fill, because we have this phenomenal database of untapped talent who are all like super duper mums, but also really want to have the career that they deserve. So I'd love to see that business really thrive. On a personal note, I have just started doing some really exciting stuff on the BBC, making these short form documentaries, and now have like a year with them guaranteed, and going forward, hopefully that's on Morning Live. So that's really, I absolutely love working on Morning Live. And I love making these films. They're so varied. Like last week was Speed Bumps, the week before that was Coercive Control. So every single week it's different.
All the important topics.
I mean, seriously. So I'm really excited about where my actual TV presenting will go. I'm really focused on that. And I want to go off and explore the world as well, you know, to like take my kids on big adventures, to make sure that my marriage is healthy and flourishing. And I want to spend some time with I'm trying to get the girls' WhatsApp group to Ibiza. And currently two of them have said they can't make it. So my focus for the next week is to make sure that I need to get them there for a trip this summer. But I'm excited. I'm excited. Lots to come, Debbie.
Zoe, before I let you go, my podcast is called Grit and Grace. And that's my mantra.
Yes.
What's yours? If you could come up with one mantra or a word or a couple of words to live by, what are they?
Oh, God. Never say no to the trip.
Never say no to the trip. Okay, go on.
Just go on the holiday, go on the girls' trip, go off explore the world, go down to the ocean for the day, get on your bike, never say no to the experience or the trip. Just go for it. Just like get it by the cojones.
Okay. All right.
Yeah?
Let's go.
Yeah.
Right. Quick fire round before we let you out of the living room. Ready?
Yes.
If you could pick one skincare brand that you'd recommend for midlife women, what would it be?
Tatcha. Japanese brand called Tatcha. Absolutely amazing.
Okay. Favourite fitness or gym brand?
Instate.
Okay. Top wellness tip. What do you do that makes a difference? One thing.
Drink loads of water.
Okay. Favourite influencer or expert or doctor for menopause advice and support?
I've got to say Lisa Snowden.
Favourite supplement for tackling menopause symptoms? You can say anything, doesn't need to be asked.
The Better Menopause.
Sorry, well done on message.
I also say I love Collo as well for collagen?
Yes, Collo, yes, yes. Very good, yeah. One beauty product that every midlife woman should own?
Sharpaw, the hair brand.
Okay, very
shampoo,
good.
Conditioner, yes, serum, yes, yes. And the gummies.
Yes, talk to me about hair.
Yeah.
Your hair?
Yeah, no.
Not.
No. No shame about hair.
No.
I've got a weft in and I've got really fine little stennies around the front, but I lost half a head of hair when I went through early menopause. So get the extensions, ladies, if you need them.
Okay, good, like that. One food or type of food makes a difference? How you eat in midlife?
Sushi.
Zoe Feldman, thank you so much for joining me on Grit and Grace. Please come back and tell us 100%. What you get up to in the future. Thank you for surviving the living room with the fly.
It's gorgeous. The fly likes it as much as I do.
And see you soon.
See you soon. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening today. And thanks to our sponsor, The Better Menopause. For more content like this, don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel or follow us on socials. See you next time as I'm joined by more incredible guests here on Grit and Grace with me, Debbie Wascoe.